promised. You're on Rise FM in 60 minutes. Thank you so much for having joined us. It has just gone 2 minutes after eight. Umkhatsho Chisape, Mpumalanga Yokana. The president, on his weekly letters that came out yesterday, he said that over the past 2 weeks, severe load shedding have disrupted our economy and caused extreme hardship for all South Africans. After more than a decade of electricity shortage, the South Africans, meaning you and I, are right to feel frustrated and angry. At times like this, can feel like there is no end in sight. That's what the president said. He concluded his letter by saying, there are no easy solutions to our electricity crisis, but we are committed and determined to explore every avenue and use every opportunity to ensure that we generate enough electricity to meet the country's needs. Yeah, seems like the conversation around energy and power is topical. I mean, Eskom announced different load shedding stages there. But I suppose let's bring in Ntate Maruha, who's been at the helm of Eskom for, as far as I remember, from 1995 all the way to 2009. He served in various structures, of which 2 years of the years he spent in Eskom, he's been CEO there. Former CEO of Eskom, Ntate Jacob, joins us now. Ntate Jacob, very warm good evening to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Good evening. Good evening.
You know, having been with Eskom, especially for those 2 years at the helm, there's been varying reports of when exactly did the concept of load shedding start. I mean, was it really 2008?
No. The concept of load shedding in power system operations is a well-entrenched concept around the world. And in Eskom, it's also a well-entrenched concept in the history of Eskom. There have been many durations of power system problems where you need load shedding or you need other measures. So, but it's not, it is not a concept formed in 2008, no.
I suppose in 1998, government wrote the white paper with intentions to restructure the energy power sector. You know, the IPPs were amongst the talks at the time. 2022, IPPs are still at the center of the conversation on the reconfiguring of our energy. Is it a fair analysis maybe to say that the blame, or we should level our frustrations at the government though? Is our government to be blamed for load shedding?
Well, it's a complex problem, but I suppose the fact that Eskom is a state-owned enterprise, government cannot shirk its blame in terms of what didn't happen, what needed to happen. So, in a way, I think because the state-owned enterprise, the entirety of government has to shoulder responsibility of where we are. But however, there are many dynamics. You talk about IPPs, and you talk about the 1998 white paper, which proposed the restructuring of the entire energy system, firstly to break up Eskom into various parts from what it is and what it still was as a vertically integrated entity. And it was in line with what was happening around the world, where electricity utilities have typically been state-owned and vertically integrated. Vertically integrated meaning they own the entire value chain of electricity. They generate, they transmit, and they distribute. But the classical model was to break it up into generation, transmission, and distribution. So each part had to be separated because it has different business dynamics. It didn't happen in 1998. And in 1998 also, the 1998 white paper also envisaged independent power producers mainly making or bringing into the power system private sector to own and operate or generate electricity and contribute to the power system. It didn't happen. Correct.
I suppose then in 2007, you briefed the Portfolio Committee on Minerals and Energy on the electricity pricing. You told the committee that Eskom wished to maintain its position as the world's lowest electricity cost producer. On the same breath, why do you think it was the right call for Eskom to have built Kusile, Medupi and Ingula instead of introducing IPPs then?
Well, the 1998 white paper envisages that Eskom should not build the next capacity. And we had anticipated as a country that the next capacity would be required by 2007. And the government's wish was that IPPs, meaning private capital, private expertise, should be procured to produce the next capacity. It didn't happen for many reasons. And one of the reasons is that when you have the lowest cost or the lowest price of electricity, you are very good to people who buy electricity from you. But as a country, you're not good to people who want to invest in the electricity generation. Because if the price is too low, the returns that you get from the electricity generation is too low. So international capital look around the world. They're looking for good returns. And in electricity, good returns are always associated with high prices of electricity. So they didn't come. That's one of the reasons. The other reason, of course, is you needed, you know, for a significant capital to be invested in a country with regulatory and policy certainty. And we're still not too sure how to bring IPPs in. So they didn't come. So in the end, the government says, look, we can see that the generation capacity is going to be short. So you, Eskom, because you can't get IPPs, go ahead and start planning and actually invest in the building of new capacity. That's what happened with Medupi, Kusile, and Ingula. It was an instruction by government based on the fact that the intended objective of getting IPPs was not coming. So for energy security, they then instructed Eskom to go ahead and build new capacity.
Yeah, you're on the Provincial Conversation Leaders. It's Rise FM, and you're on Rise FM in 60 minutes. My guest this evening is former Eskom CEO, that is Jacob Moraga. He's speaking to us here on Rise FM in 60 minutes around the status of Eskom and how it can be salvaged. That is Jacob, does the development of society equate to the higher demand for energy? And is the demand of energy higher now, and does Eskom has the capacity to carry the country?
Yes, but the facts are the following, is that the capacity or the demand for electricity has reduced for various reasons. In 2009, the energy demand in 2009 when I left Eskom was higher than it is now.
Okay.
But the generation capacity has grown. We in 2009, we just under 40,000 megawatts. Today, Eskom has got about around 46,000 megawatts. And additional to that is the IPPs. We have in the region of about 6,000 megawatts of IPPs additional to the 46,000 megawatts of Eskom. So there's more capacity and there's less demand. So what is the problem? The problem is the performance of the Eskom fleet has degenerated, worsened, and the current problem is a direct correlation to the poor performance of Eskom generation. That's why we're having a load shedding. So it's the poor performance, deteriorating performance of the current Eskom fleet.
You know, as a public, we are often led to believe that renewable energy is going to maybe try to put an end to load shedding. I mean, when we draw lessons from developed economies, are they also phasing out coal?
Look, there are needed lessons to be learned. Just let's talk about renewable. Renewable energy, so what is the intent of the renewable energy? We now know with fossil fuels, particularly coal, they have an impact on climate change, and that's an undisputable fact. As humanity, we have emitted a lot of CO2 into the atmosphere, and that is causing the rise of temperatures, which we call climate change. And as humanity, we need to reduce our emissions so that we don't have a climate change catastrophe. And therefore, we need to look at energy sources that are non-emitting, and renewable energy, solar, wind, hydro, and in some cases, I think nuclear is going to feature as a renewable source because it's non-emitting, so that we don't continue to increase the climate change prices. However, there are technical and engineering challenges. So some of the advanced countries in the world, like Germany, have been leading the charge in investing in more renewables, solar, wind, and other technologies, so that they minimize on their fossil fuels. But the latest crisis with Ukraine, because one of the things that Germany did was they increased gas usage, natural gas usage, preferred gas usage compared to coal, because gas is still a fossil fuel. It emits, but compared to coal, gas emits 50% less carbon than coal. So as a transition, you can prioritize gas compared to coal. But the lessons we've learned to run a modern economy with renewables alone. Germany invested heavily in renewables. They didn't close down their fossil. They deprioritized it. But when the Russian-Ukraine war started, there was less gas coming to Germany. And it actually has put Germany into an economic crisis. And in fact, the Russian war and the gas throttle or the gas limiting of the gas to Europe by Russia has caused the deepest economic crisis in Europe. And so we're beginning to learn that we don't have a solution to run a modern economy with renewables alone.
Sure.
And that's a lesson, immediate lesson that we really need to learn. And for South Africa, the notion that we can switch off coal in preference of renewable, we now know is not feasible, both technically and commercially.
Yeah, definitely. I suppose that particular submission you make there, Ntate Moroga, is that there are definitely disadvantages to even renewable energy, as far as we can praise it for the positives of, you know, emission reduction. But I mean, there's definitely are disadvantages into just shifting completely to renewable energies. I suppose let's also maybe touch on this one. I mean, Minister Kodan said that the lack of engineering and technical skills and experience in Eskom remained a significant challenge. How much of a challenge is that actually? Is particularly the lack of engineering or lack of skilled individuals in the power utility?
Well, I can't say I'm as intimately familiar with that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, clearly running a sophisticated power system like ESCOM requires highly skilled engineering technical skills to run it efficiently. It may well be, you know, that there's been, you know, skill, you know, exodus in ESCOM, but I'm still convinced that still enough critical skills to run ESCOM. Having been there for 15 years, I have met many highly skilled people who are still in ESCOM. So I don't think it's a crisis. And I don't think it's the only cause of what we have now. One of the reasons, you know, about where we are is that there has been a narrative that we can easily abandon our coal system and go to renewable. So Germany is teaching us that you need both. You need to baseload coal-based generation capacity, but you need to complement it with renewables. And to an extent that the sun shines, the wind blows, you prioritize those sources so that you can limit on your emissions.
Yeah.
But you don't have to switch off the fossil or coal-based system.
Yeah.
In fact, Germany demonstrated that actually what they did, Germany, is that they almost doubled their existing capacity with renewables. And that's how they were balancing out.
Yeah.
So that seems to be the lesson. And as we go further with our agenda of climate change, those are the kind of lessons and dynamics we need to learn.
Yeah. Jacob, maybe let's wrap up with this one. I mean, I've seen that on your social platform, you say that you don't subscribe to the notion that the 100 megawatt solar power and 5,000 megawatt of battery storage, well, basically you hold a view that it is an engineering fiction. Why is that?
No. You see, there is a position held by people that to solve load shedding, we must procure 100, I think it's 10,000 megawatts of 10,000 megawatts of
solar.
Renewable, meaning solar,
yes,
and wind.
Yes.
And we must procure 5,000 megawatts of battery storage. Now, firstly, as I've indicated, you cannot solve. You see, at the moment, the current crisis is because there is consistently 15,000 megawatts in ESCOM that is not operational because it's down or for various reasons, that constitutes about 40% of ESCOM's current capacity. We need to focus on that because 40% equating to 15,000 is just too much.
Yeah, Dr. Jacob.
yeah.
Unfortunately, you and I have run out of time, but I want to thank you, you know, for agreeing to chat to us. I mean, we are really a fan of, you know, some of your thought process that you disseminate on social platforms, particularly being at the helm of ESCOM. It gives us a different view of what really the problem is. And we really want to applaud you and encourage you not to stop, you know, feeding the beast that is us, the nation of South Africa. Really want to thank you.
No, thank you very much. Thank you.
That was the former ESCOM CEO, Dr. Jacob Maroga, talking to us here on Rise FM in 60 Minutes about the state of affairs as far as the power utility is concerned. He says that Germany is an example, case in point. We should learn from Germany that we can't automatically phase out coal completely because we need it to sustain the economy. Take a listen at this, what the president, conversing for the votes in 2021, said he was speaking on his capacity as the ANC president.
Okay. No electricity, no vote. Ori, no electricity, no vote. Joanu. Wabona yantsisa yini. Yanghlekisa ngoba.
Yeah, that's the president there saying yamhlekisa le ndaba of voters saying no electricity, no vote. I'm reminded of the president Jacob Zuma's laugh, pardon me, on Rise FM in 60 minutes.
Where the facts and opinions build the discourse. Rise FM in 60 minutes with Musa Skhosana.